I'm Rich Egger, and this is Emphasis. Today's guest is Ralph Martier. He's Executive Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. He was in Macomb this week to give a presentation at Western Illinois University. Your organization describes itself as a bipartisan research and advocacy think tank that promotes fair, efficient, and progressive tax spending and economic policies. So, is today's tax structure in Illinois fair?
Let me think about it. No. It took a long time to come to that conclusion. Now, Illinois actually is consistently rated as one of the most unfair taxing states in the nation. Most recently, the Institute of Tax and Economic Policy, I think, ranked us fourth or fifth most unfair taxing state in the country. And the reason for that is pretty simple. We have a flat income tax required by our state constitution, and the income tax is really one of the ways you're supposed to be able to create tax fairness in your fiscal policy. And this goes all the way back to Adam Smith. So this isn't a lefty concept. I want to be very clear. This is a fundamental principle of fair taxation, even in a capitalist economy. So Adam Smith said, if you want to tax fairly in a capitalist economy, actually taxes ought to be designed as much as possible to remedy inequality of riches by relieving the poor and burdening the rich. And his thought process behind that was pretty simple. In a capitalist economy, he believed economic growth would always disproportionately advantage top-income classes over everyone else. And so since they'd have had the greatest benefit from the system, they should have the greatest tax burden to support the system. Very logical. And, of course, the data bear out that Adam Smith's theory very much closely follows that in reality.
And then the problem in Illinois is that it's in the Constitution, so it's going to take a constitutional amendment to change that?
That's right, and it's doable. I mean, you need to pass it through the House and the Senate by a three-fifths vote, and then the general electorate needs to adopt it in a general election by the lesser of three-fifths of the individuals who vote on the amendment itself, or at least half of the people who vote in the election. If there's an affirmative vote from that percentage, you get your graduated rate structure. And Illinois really needs to do this. I mean, if you look at it long-term, the economy in Illinois, very much not only do we follow national trends, things here, income inequality here are a little bit worse, and a lot of that is because of the shift in our economy. We've gone from being primarily a manufacturing state to not just a service-based state, but a low-wage service-based state. So in 1980, manufacturing was the number one employer in Illinois, 20.4% of the workforce, one out of five workers, high-paying, good-benefit manufacturing job. Today, manufacturing ranks fifth. And our new number one employer is, in fact, low-wage service with 33% of the workforce. So we've seen a very significant shift in our economy, which has meant the sort of concentration of wealth and income growth in the top income classes, top 5% or so, whereas for most people in Illinois, most working people in Illinois, their incomes have been flat or declining after inflation for years, and yet we're stuck with this flat tax that really doesn't account for this distribution and income growth in the economy. So to fix that, it would make a lot of sense to get a constitutional amendment passed. I think if you explained it rationally to voters, it would pass. And as you pointed out, my board doesn't just describe ourselves as bipartisan. We have some very prominent Republicans on our board and some very prominent Democrats who neither like nor trust each other. And this is a very good thing for the staff because it allows us to focus on data and best practices. And the data are very clear here. There has been a rapid growth of incomes at the top of the ladder and a decline in incomes at the bottom and middle and a flattening out at the upper middle. So we need to recognize that economic reality in our tax policy, create a graduated rate structure in Illinois that will allow us to tax affluent folks a little higher, where frankly, they'd be paying this increased tax burden out of their growing wealth rather than everyone else paying it out of their growing poverty.
Well, now you think it can be explained to the public and the public could understand and approve it, but can politicians get up the political will to approve something like this?
Well, you know, the interesting thing on this is I don't think it really matters whether you're liberal or conservative or a Democrat or Republican. I mean, if you're in the legislature, when you vote to allow the graduated rate structure to go to the people, to your constituents in a vote, you're not deciding. You're letting your constituents decide how they want to be taxed. I don't know of anything in conservative ideology that says you shouldn't listen to your constituents on how they want to be taxed. So I think there's a very strong argument politically, irrespective of ideological beliefs, to make that, look, you should support at least allowing people having the opportunity to decide how they want to be taxed. Now, the problem, of course, with that is tax policy is the traditional blunt instrument of politics, and there's probably no more demagogued, if you will, issue than tax policy. And so I think that there'll be some that just try to make political hay here. And I think the Republican Party in Illinois has actually taken a platform position against graduated rate structure, which they explain as, gee, if we went to that, we'd chase millionaires out of the state, those kinds of arguments, which frankly don't hold up at all with the data. There is absolutely no statistical correlation between states that have high tax policy and millionaires running away or coming in. In fact, California has one of the highest, if not, in fact, right now, the highest marginal tax rate for millionaires in the nation, and they have net immigration of millionaires in that state, I guess, mm-hmm. running there to be taxed higher. So the whole thing is a little silly on these arguments that it would hurt you economically. It absolutely won't. One of the best studies on that, and I think this kind of information needs to get out, was done by the Institute for Tax and Economic Policy, and they actually compared economic growth over the 2000 to 2010 sequence of the 9 states in America that have the absolute highest marginal income tax rates versus the 9 states in America with no income tax. Only 41 of the 50 states have an income tax. So this wasn't even a comparison of the highest tax states versus the lowest tax states. It was the highest income tax states versus the no income mm-hmm. tax states. And what they found was over the sequence, the high tax states actually did a better job of growing state GDP per capita, overall economic growth, better change in median wage, and identical unemployment rates. So there's no correlation from a tax policy standpoint between being high tax and harming your economy at all. And in fact, other things matter more to economic growth. And one thing that matters is if state government doesn't have adequate capacity to continue making appropriate investments in core public services, you actually harm your private sector economy. And the reason for that is simple. Think about what state government spends its money on. 9 out of 10 dollars goes to 4 things: education, healthcare, social services, public safety. Well, those are all labor intensive. So when state government cuts its spending, what it's really cutting is the wages and salaries of the teachers and the social workers and the healthcare providers and the correctional officers, et cetera, that provide these services. Well, our entire economy is driven by consumer spending. So when you're cutting the wages and salaries of workers who then can't spend in the consumer economy, that hurts the private sector. And in fact, the states with the lowest taxes really did the worst job coming out of the recession, particularly in the Midwest, because those states had to cut their spending more. So all this stuff is poorly played in the media. And I think in Illinois, once again, you get good information out. I think even conservatives can be okay with supporting letting voters decide how they want to be taxed. And in this case, we really should have a graduated rate structure. It would not only tax people more fairly, it would raise needed revenue that could support core services.
Let's talk about the state's pension system. Your organization has advocated for changing the way the liability is paid down. Can you explain that?
Yeah, real simple. You know, all the concern raised over this $95 billion unfunded liability is legitimate, but it's been misplaced. I mean, a $95 billion unfunded liability is, shall we say, significant. That's a pretty big hole.
But it's not as if the state's being asked to pay that all at once either.
No, it's not being asked to pay it all at once, number one. And number two, everyone's focus has been on the benefits provided under the system, as if those were the driver of this unfunded liability. And that's the crux of the problem. In fact, benefits that are provided under the system, in fact, all the factors of the system itself haven't created the crisis we're in. If you looked at and isolated those things that are inherent to the pension systems and looked at how much they contributed to our unfunded liability, to this $95 billion mess, what you would see is salary increases, benefit increases, changes in assumptions, people living longer, changes in investment rates, all that stuff. If those were our only problems, we'd be over 80% funded today. We're only 40% funded. A public pension system is considered healthy if it's 80% funded. Then you look at the impact of the Great Recession. Okay, that hurt. We lost about $15 billion in assets in 2008 and 2009 as financial markets collapsed as part of the Great Recession. You add that problem to those aspects that are inherent to the pension system itself, and we'd still be over 70% funded today, still no crisis. The reason we have a crisis in Illinois is for well over 50 years, the state has borrowed against what it owed its pension system and used this borrowed money to subsidize service delivery cost. And because the state knew it couldn't pay these bills back on any rational basis, they didn't have the revenue, they have a tax policy problem, they passed a law that basically allowed them to borrow for years in 1995, the pension ramp law. And under that law, there was a very backloaded repayment structure so that we are now in that part of the repayment plan where payments jump on the debt service, not the benefits. The debt service for past borrowings, they jump annually at unsustainable, unaffordable levels right now. In fact, each of the last three fiscal years, 12, 13, and 14, the debt service alone jumped by over $1 billion a year. Whereas, that now think about that. You got to pay $1 billion more than the year before, and it's all to repay past due borrowings. The normal cost, the employer contribution into the system to fund pension benefits, has been flat over the sequence. The entire problem is driven by this backloaded payment schedule that's a creature of statute. It's a total fiction. It's money we owe ourselves. It wasn't passed pursuant to any actuarial plan. It was a 50-year plan. And we need to throw it out. And we need to reamortize the debt like a rational borrower would with a rational lender, like, I don't know, most of your listeners would do with their banks for their home mortgage. I mean, does your home mortgage have back years where the payments jump annually by hundreds and thousands of dollars? No, they don't. Why? You and your bank are rational. You set up a payment plan that was affordable and that was a flat dollar amount every year. Now, in this case, the state doesn't even have to negotiate its repayment plan, its restructuring of its payment plan with any third-party lender. Owes the money to itself. Just pass a new law. And what we did was we modeled this out, and lo and behold, if you did reamortize the debt over a new 45-year period, you could actually get your annual payments on the debt service to a flat dollar amount with combined with the employer normal cost are less than what the current ramp requires. You solve the problem, you take the fiscal pressure off the state, and there's one more real advantage of doing it this way. It's unquestionably constitutional. Whereas every attempt to cut benefits earned by workers or retirees is clearly unconstitutional under Illinois law, will be undone at some juncture, and will create an even worse fiscal nightmare.
Now your plan, you're talking about setting aside, what, about $7 billion a year in those repayments, to repay at a rate of about $7 billion a year?
Well, no, actually what we did was we worked it out where we only amortized 80% of the debt. We've had a number of different plans, but one of the objections that was made by the political system, of course, is if you tried to amortize the whole thing, the payments would come to about $7.5-$8 billion a year, and they didn't want to afford that when their current pension payment is just over $6 billion a year. So we said, well, we could get it down to $6 billion. Just amortize 80% of your unfunded liability, which gets you, by the way, more than 80% funded at the end of the cycle. So you're going to be very healthy. You're going to be very well funded. And your total payments, debt service plus employer normal cost, come to about $6.1 billion a year, which is precisely where you are on the ramp. So it's a very doable thing. It's common sense. Now, the other objection raised, now the first objection that was raised to our proposal was we didn't want to come up with extra money up front. Okay, we found a way to do it without coming up with extra money up front. The second objection is, well, actuaries prefer to have things paid off in 30 years, which is true, by the way. And this takes 45 rather than 30 years. Absolutely true. It's not what actuaries would love, but they can't pay $95 billion in unfunded liability in 30 years under any proposal. Fiscal system won't support that. Even if we reform it, even if we make it from one of the worst fiscal systems in the nation to one of the best, which takes a lot of tax reform, even if we were to do all that, we still couldn't afford $95 billion paid off in 30 years and continue to fund services. So if you can never do it, it's just simply unaffordable, why are you still talking about it? I mean, the bottom line is this debt was run up over well over 50 years. Why are you trying to force its repayment in 30? It's just silly. It has absolutely no practical value whatsoever, and we need to focus on a practical solution that actually takes the fiscal pressure of these mounting annual payments off of the state. Even bigger picture, there have been a number of proposals that have been put on the table to cut these benefits, which we think are unconstitutional, pretty clearly unconstitutional. Even if they were constitutional and they generated all the savings that, let's say, Elaine Neckritz and Daniel Biss claim they'll save, or the governor claim they'll save, even if all that happened, you wouldn't take any of the fiscal pressure off the state, because it's not the benefits driving this problem. It's the debt service. So you leave that ever-increasing annual debt service in place, which is still jumping by over $1 billion a year. So you haven't taken any fiscal pressure off of the state's tax system. You still can't afford to fund services. You still can't make your payments, but you've created an unconstitutional cut in benefits for workers and retirees. I think that that's probably not the best way to go.
Can the state afford $6 billion a year, given that money is so tight?
You know, it can, and in fact, it should right now. And I think that, number one, even the current system could afford that. But that means that we have to continue to do some bad things as far as underfunding education statewide and not really restoring a significant amount of the cuts made to the social service program providers. And really, if you think about it, Illinois, we have the fifth largest economy of any state in the nation. It's over $670 billion. Heck, if Illinois were an independent country, that economy is so large, we'd have the 19th largest economy in the world. So we have a larger economy than Saudi Arabia and Ireland and Greece and Norway and places folks may have heard of. So in this big, rich state, for the last 25 years, we've been very much cutting services for people with developmental disabilities, people with many mental health problems, single working parents that need childcare, protecting abused and neglected children, protecting homebound seniors, people that are suffering from domestic violence problems. We've been cutting all those programs and cutting them consistently in this big, rich state. That's somewhat outrageous, and we could certainly afford to do a much better job there. And that's just one side of the harm caused by these cuts. Educationally, the funding system in Illinois is frankly outrageous. So our starting point for education funding in Illinois right now is about $2,200 less per kid than what it would cost to purchase an education of sufficient quality so that two-thirds of our non-at-risk children could actually pass tests. That's woefully inadequate. In fact, our current funding system, if you took that $2,000 per kid and multiplied it out by the system, and we've run it through ISBE, what you see is we're $4 billion short of having enough money in our educational system to get two-thirds of our kids passing tests. We don't even try to figure out what it costs to educate our at-risk children who come from poverty, have special needs, or English language learners. We don't even try to educate them. And we throw one-third of the children with a reasonable likelihood of success out the window, and we still can't make that level. So Illinois needs more money in its system, long story short. So even though the current fiscal system could afford $6.1 billion a year, I think what the state needs to do is enhance its revenue two different ways, expanding the sales tax base to include consumer services and going to this graduated rate structure on the income tax. You put those two things together, you'd get about $4.5 to $5.2 billion more in annual revenue than what we have now. We've got an accumulated deficit of about $8.2 billion. Take a couple of years to pay that off. Once you pay that off, you could then start enhancing your funding for public education. You could start enhancing your funding for social services. And we could do all this while remaining relatively low tax, still in the bottom 18 states in the nation in total tax burden. That's what we could do. But it requires some political will, and it requires dealing with this pension problem, honestly, by reamortizing the debt, which is the real driver of our problem, and not focusing on the benefits.
The state's financial problems, the issues with the pension system, I imagine these will be issues in next year's campaigns for governor. Do you think either major party deserves more blame than the other?
You know, no. If there's ever an area where you have bipartisan complicity in creating the problem, it is certainly the fiscal system. This has been through Democratic and Republican gubernatorial administrations, Democratic and Republican control of the Senate. And even the one small period of time recently when there was actually Republican control of the House and Speaker Madigan wasn't Speaker for a nanosecond. The bottom line is through different control by different party of the legislature and the governor's office, there's been one thing they've agreed upon, shorting the pension systems and diverting the revenue to fund services and not dealing with their fiscal problems. So let's not try to blame this on any one party or any one government official, and let's instead just fix the problem. And the data are very clear on what Illinois needs to do: expand the sales tax base to include consumer services, have a graduated rate structure for its income tax, and re-amortize its pension debt. It does those three things. We remain low tax overall, but we could actually pay our bills, fund our pensions, and lo and behold, do an adequate job down the road of investing in education and providing core services to vulnerable populations.
What other issues will your organization be watching during this legislative session, or is this the big enchilada here?
Well, you know, we're working pretty hard on the pension issue, and we're also working pretty hard on education funding reform, as a matter of fact. We are focused on changing the whole way the state goes about funding education. We want to go to an evidence-based model. We think evidence is good, best practices are good. And frankly, this has been worked out where you could actually cost out what the expenses are of implementing those sort of educational practices that the data show, that the evidence show, correlate to enhancing student achievement over time. Well, that's what you want to be paying for. You want to pay for those things that have demonstrated to work and help students learn, right? Illinois' current funding system doesn't take into account the actual cost of educating children. And so we are trying to get the state to move from its current, well, here's how we're going to fund schools based on what we think our available assets are, to a methodology where they say we're going to fund schools based on the cost of providing students with what they need to learn as demonstrated by the data. We think that's a much better public policy approach to funding education. It would cost significantly more than what we're doing now. About, like I said before, about $4.5 billion more a year. You wouldn't put that all in 1 year. You'd phase into that. You'd generate the revenue to do it. You'd allow for thoughtful planning. And that's the approach we're taking. But that is the second thing that we really have high on our calendar. So we do want to fix tax policy. We do want to fix education policy, and probably redo this pension ramp.
The education, some educators, I think, would want, you know, they talk about local control for their schools. So how much should the state, what percentage should the state be funding schools at, and how much should, if they want local control, should they be coming up with within their own districts?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and the answer is whatever the state should be coming up with, it should be more than what they're doing now. So right now, Illinois covers 27.6% of the cost of public education. The national average is for a state, and this is National Center on Education Statistics. This is just the hard facts. This is no modeling. This is just the numbers. Yeah. The national averages are for states to cover 46.3%. So not only are we way below the national average, we actually rank 50th in the country in the portion of education funding covered by state-based resources. So what that has done, obviously, if the state's not paying for it, and the feds put very little in, the federal government only covers about 9 or 10% of the cost of public education, depending on the year, so call it 10%. So in Illinois, if only 27% is covered by the state and another 10% from the feds, then boom, local governments are on the hook for 63%. We rely more on local property taxes to fund education than any other state in the nation. That is what has made Illinois also one of the most inequitable education funding systems in the country, because once you've tied the quality of the public education that a school district can afford to give its children to the local property wealth where those kids live, you've really created a system where only areas like Barrington and Wilmette and Winnetka, or if you're fortunate enough in your community to maybe have a nuclear power plant that has a high property value that you could tax, only those communities will actually be able to provide an adequate education to their children. And what we've seen in Illinois is that's very much the case. And so the flat grant communities are those communities in Illinois with the highest property values, and they get the least support from the state. And interestingly enough, in those communities, they spend on average, here's that magic number again, about $2,200 more per kid on educating their children than do everyone else in the state, which is just about the shortfall between what we think it costs to educate children and what the state's actually putting in. Those flat grant communities know something about educating their children. And I invite you up to River Forest, Illinois. We are not quite flat grant. We're close. We're alternative grant. I serve on the school board. And I invite you to come up and look at our school. We're a national blue ribbon school. And I want you to know some of the things my children have had in their public schools, mind you. They've had their choice of four foreign languages. They've had great books class, classes. They've had their choice of 20 orchestral instruments and a similar number of band instruments that we provide and teach them how to play. They get, I can't tell you the number of science clubs and blah, blah, blah clubs and all these other things. Our 7th and 8th graders all get iPads, and not only these iPads loaded with their science and their math and their English and their history, it's loaded with art and music. And we don't just train the 7th and 8th graders on how to use it, we train their parents. And the list goes on, but if you don't think the children coming out of my community have an advantage over kids in Marion or East St. Louis, or, you know, you pick the middle income to lower income community across the state of Illinois, then, I don't know, share what you're smoking with your readers, because we should all be that happy, or your listeners. The bottom line is we really provide a world-class education to our kids in those communities in Illinois that are fortunate enough to have property wealth. It shouldn't be that way. And especially when you look at big picture, the correlation between educational attainment and economic viability in the modern world. What we now know, and for the longest time this was true, that there was a direct correlation between your educational attainment and your unemployment rate, right? Where the higher your level of education, the lower your unemployment rate, except maybe for art history majors, and really no one can help them. But the difference has come on wages. So since 1980 in Illinois, the only cohort of workers that have actually seen their incomes increase at a rate greater than inflation have a college degree. Every other worker has seen their income decline since 1980, meaning their purchasing power has gone down, their ability to provide for their family has been constrained, and they've run up credit card debt, probably during the housing bubble, ran up a bunch of equity loans on the home, and it's because of a wage squeeze for lesser educationally attained individuals. We gotta provide every kid with an adequate education in Illinois. We're not doing that. We certainly have the capacity to do it. Big picture, my organization thinks the state needs to raise about $5 billion more in taxes than what it currently has. That's a lot of money, $5 billion. We have a $670 billion economy. It's less than 1% of the economic activity in this state. That is such a small tax increase in context of our state GDP. It's not measurable by any peer-reviewed econometric model that determines whether or not a tax increase could harm, for instance, the private sector economy. It's too small. And that's what's holding Illinois back.
Ralph Martyr is Executive Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. For Tri-State's Public Radio News, I'm Rich Egger.